Welcome to the show. It is Friday, June 27th, and a happy Friday to all of you out there. Adam Azer with Scott White and Al Melchior. Two star pitchers for next week, best and worst hitting matchups, and plenty to talk about from last night, including Ernesto Friere's bad outing. I want to dedicate some time to emails today because I've been neglecting the emails, and I feel bad about it, guys.
No need. Guilt is wasted emotion.
Okay.
You're doing the right thing. You're just addressing the need.
Yeah. Today, I need emails. Also, buy low, sell high. I asked you guys for three of each. You came up with a fun little list here.
Oh, fun one.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Stat of the day number one. Jay Bruce has an extra base hit in seven straight games. Longest streak for a Reds player since 1986. Dave Parker, eight in a row with an extra base hit in 1986. AP, thank you for that stat of the day. Jay Bruce has two home runs and seven doubles and seven RBI in that seven-game stretch. Thoughts?
All right, I'll put them back up in my rankings.
Yeah? Well, they are doubles instead of home runs.
No, the homers were the only thing I wasn't worried about before.
Okay. So he's Jay Bruce again?
Yeah.
Stat of the day number two. Cole Hamels pitched seven innings or more for the 10th straight time. And he's 2-2 in those outings.
Phillies.
In those last nine outings before last night, Hamels had a 1.66 ERA, best in baseball. This is all from the Associated Press recap. But the Phillies have scored three runs or fewer in 10 of Hamels' 13 starts this year. He's 4-2. The lack of run support is killing his fantasy value, but he is otherwise having an excellent year. Gave up three home runs yesterday, but only seven on the year in 13 starts. Any thoughts on Hamels, who's 4-2 with a 284?
Yeah, the start yesterday was actually his worst in six, and he only gave up three earned and seven or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I think the same thing burned him last year. He went 8-14. People remember it as being a lot worse of a season than it was. He had two bad starts at the very beginning of the season, but then was great after that. Happened to go 8-14. So I'm not... The Phillies aren't so bad that I feel like this is just the way it is and you're stuck with another 8-14 pitcher here. So if that's for some reason bringing down his value in your league, look at all the double-digit strikeout games he has. I would be happy to buy him.
Yeah, I think what's weird is that this is 3 years in a row where like an elite pitcher for these Phillies, because it was Cliff Lee won six games in 2012.
Yeah.
So 3 years in a row that an elite pitcher is being really held back by a weird record. Because even if you pitch for a bad team, if you're pitching this well, you should be better than 4-2 if you have a 2.84 ERA and over a strikeout per inning, I think.
Yeah, agreed. And actually, I was looking at some run support stuff yesterday for a blog post I actually wound up not doing, but I'll just put that one in the can.
Okay.
But, there's a handful of pitchers that are on teams that should be giving them good run support that aren't getting it, and a handful that are in the opposite situation. And, I mean, I think with Hamels last year, the one loss improved in the second half.
I got his page open here so I can check.
It's a race.
But it's a thing, especially, I mean, it's one thing if you're a Padres pitcher or, you know, you're an A's pitcher and you're at the extremes of run support, but...
I made a wrong click. You're going to win.
Second half last year, he was 4-5. He was actually 10-3 before the All-Star break and 4-5 after the All-Star break. Yeah.
But here's some reason to be encouraged. David Price, we know, has kind of suffered from this, too, this year. He's 6-7.
Yeah.
He's still the sixth best pitcher in head-to-head points leagues, even with that bad record.
And he says he's pitching better than he's ever had in his career.
Which is true.
Which is scary. okay. Sorry. Shall we move on, or did you want to finish your point?
No, I think I made it, which is the point that, you know, most of the teams that are kind of in the middle of the pack, when you see weird things with run support, they should even themselves out, and so should the one lost record.
So, Marcell Ozuna, I want to get into him a little bit later. Lucas Duda and others. Our email address is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Let's read some awesome emails. Cliff in Salt Lake City, Utah says, "Dear Strawberry, Lenny, and Dickie."
I caught this one ahead of time. Strawberry and Dickie are obviously last names of notable Mets. Lenny... I guess it's Lenny Dykstra, yes. Which is the first name. So
right.
I, I don't know if there's somebody last name Lenny I'm forgetting.
It's got, I just thought it was Lenny Dykstra.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you're going to go that route, I think you'd go R.A. at least. I could actually say maybe Daryl. Maybe hard to figure out.
Yeah, but I guess so. But if it were Daryl, Lenny, yeah. Cliff, you got to work on it. All right, here's what he
parallel
says.
Parallel construction.
And where's Doc?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to lie. The World Cup has been affecting my lineup changes as of late, but not so much that I didn't notice Lucas Duda's little hot streak. With four home runs in his last six games and a slash line of 252, 346, 482, does Duda hold any value outside of Roto Leagues or simply adding him for the Big Lebowski theme team name, the Duda Abides? Will he hit eight more home runs rest of season? So I actually have some stats on Lucas Duda. He was in four up before I saw this email. Mm-hmm. 41% owned. Last 24 games, 278 with five home runs, but four of them have come in the last 16 games. Terrible against lefties, but slugs 529 against righties and batting 290 in June with a 638 slugging percentage.
And he does more than that, too. He walks a lot in his last 28 games, 404 on-base percentage compared to a 289 batting average.
I think he's a top 10 first baseman in the last 28 days.
Yeah.
He's right around 10th, like 9th, 10th, something right. Like that, yeah.
So 41% owned. First of all, well, to answer the question, will Lucas Duda hit eight more home runs rest of season?
Oh, I think it's a cinch. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And what do you think about him?
I mean, the problem there's a couple problems here. One, I know I'm guilty of seeing him get hot like this and saying, oh, look, Lucas Duda, he's the greatest player ever, like he showed in a partial 2011 season. And then he's on the waiver wire in 80% of leagues 2 weeks later. So I'm a little hesitant to go all aboard on this. But I do think 44% is probably a little under-owned. The biggest issue is that he sits against left-handers, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. During this hot stretch they faced, I think, three left-handers here in the last seven games or so, and he sat against all of them. So it's not changing, and that means you got to really pick your spots with him. It probably eliminates him from head-to-head consideration, and that's theoretically where he would be most valuable because of the walk rate.
Duda or Singleton?
Singleton.
I agree.
I also wonder if he's played a lot of these games recently at home, because I checked earlier in the year and he did not have good road splits. He had pretty good home splits.
Scott, you on this one?
I'm on it.
All right. Duda or...
And actually, let me qualify that, because the home batting average wasn't good when I had checked this early in the year, but the power numbers were good and the batting average looked like something that was going to improve.
All right. So while he checks that, Duda or Casey McGee?
I think I'll go Duda.
I will also go Duda, and I will tell you that he's a monster away from Citi Field. 308, 5 home runs, 924 OPS. At home, 189, right. 7 home runs, and a 718 OPS.
All right, the batting average is bad, but... Yeah. Well, maybe he... Okay, because, yeah, there was a big ISO split.
Okay.
But maybe that's closed.
All right. There's your Lucas Duda analysis. Andy from Minnesota says, Alfredo Simon's been a pleasant surprise this year, but seems to never get any love in the rankings. Why is that? Would you try and move him for a struggling bat like Desmond Jennings, Brandon Phillips, or Alan Craig? There you go, Alfredo Simon.
I'm just waiting for the bottom to fall out. I'm fine owning him, using him for as long as it lasts, especially since he's a SPARP. But because he gives up so much contact and the track record is so pedestrian,
I just don't really trust him fully. I would disagree about the track record a little bit, because he's been really good in Cincinnati. Granted, all as a reliever.
Yeah, I was a reliever before now. Yeah.
But, I mean, like I've made this point before. If you took a guy who had a 266 and a 287 ERA from the bullpen and put him in the rotation, you'd be somewhat excited about him. Now, the difference between him and like Tanner Shepherds and Robbie Ross is he wasn't dominant in the bullpen like they were, but we were excited about them preseason, and that didn't work out.
He's another one that the splits, and I think I'm more accurate on this one, that the splits are not good at home. I think he's given up almost all of his home runs at home, which would make sense, but that makes him a risky guy half the time.
Also, he's approaching his season high in innings, so I think that's partially concerning as well.
And 240 BABIP, 84% strand rate makes him a huge regression candidate as well.
Looks like five of his last seven starts have also come on the road, or actually six of his last eight starts have come on the road.
If I saw somebody drop him in one of my leagues, I'd be first in line to pick him up. But
in a roto league?
Yeah, I think even in a roto league, he's must own. But okay. I don't think he has much trade value.
All right, that's Alfredo Simon. Here's Mike from Boston. Hey, Danny, Jesse, and Joey. I have a bone to pick with all the negative... I should point out, this email was sent yesterday before the Angels game. I have a bone to pick with all the negative comments about Ernesto Friere. He's blown only three saves this year, and I'm sure if you look deeper into his stats, you'll see his albatross 5.63 ERA and 1.28 whip are more caused by Socha pitching him in non-save situations and less to do with him having bad stuff or even being a bad closer. Just stop pitching him in 9-2 games like the one versus Atlanta on the 14th where he gave up four earned runs in no innings. His numbers should never have been called. And that's from Mike in Boston.
Cut it out, Mike.
It's an interesting thought, and yesterday was a non-save situation where Friere came in a five-run game and gave up three runs on one hit in two-thirds of an inning. He actually didn't give up the runs. He loaded the bases, and then Joe Smith came in, gave up a Mauer double. All the runs were charged to Friere, and then Smith got the save.
That's so mean,
yeah,
Joe Smith.
Well, Smith wants to get the closer's
role. I know, exactly.
But Socha says they're a better team with Friere as the closer. They want Smith. He's more versatile. Pitch two innings, whatever it may be. But anyway, to get to the question here, it's just he's so hot and cold, Friere, and so unreliable.
Well, you know, and I mean it's an interesting point and one that was kind of validated by what happened yesterday. But by the same token, you know, maybe we need to say better things about him as a pitcher. But given that this is the usage pattern, this is still going to affect you in fantasy.
Yeah. Is there a way to see splits in save situations
and
non-save situations?
Yeah, just wondering that. I haven't seen that anywhere.
Yeah, me either.
But, yeah, that'd be a handy stat.
All right, then we have a player comparison. Oh, all right, so let's finish that thought there. What's your take on Smith and Friere after last night?
It's still the same for me, and just reflects what you were just saying, that they want Friere as the closer, but he just hasn't performed well enough to hold the job down. So I think this is just going to ping pong back and forth and forth and back all season.
Maybe for just a month, though.
Because they think acquire something.
Yeah, they're going to make a trade.
Right.
Socha said he's the best choice to close with what they have now.
Right. Yeah, I almost feel like his comments about Friere and Smith are more like, we want Smith in the seventh or eighth or both, rather than we want Friere closing. I think it's more about Joe Smith's versatility rather than Friere as the closer.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And so maybe Houston Street ends up with the Angels or something like that.
So Mike Socha is to Ernesto Friere as Lloyd McClendon is to Jesus Montero. he's the best we got.
Oh, okay.
Next question.
Oh, I thought you were making fun of me for when I said Clint Hurdle instead of McClendon, but now I'm just completely...
Yeah, no,
it's all about
but
you,
now I see what you're talking
always.
About. Oh, come on, Scott.
I'm just kidding.
All right, last one here is from Nick Lang in Charlottesville, Virginia. He's got a pitcher comparison. Pitcher one, 16 starts, 8 quality starts, 7-4 with a 4.80 ERA. Pitcher two, 16 starts, 8 quality starts, 6-5 with a 4.42 ERA. They have very similar strikeout to walk ratios. Pitcher one has a 1.43 whip, and pitcher two has a 1.34 whip. Pitcher one is 19th for Al and 42nd for Scott in the rankings. Pitcher two is 105th for Al and 101st for Scott in the rankings. We all seem to think we know who pitcher one is.
Yeah, just because it shows my ranking here is 19th for pitcher one.
Right.
And I just looked yesterday, and I'm pretty sure that's Homer Bailey.
You guys are right. That's Homer Bailey. Now, who...
And I actually did think Homer Bailey's ERA was a little lower than that.
Oh.
I knew it was in the fours.
Pitcher two is interesting.
Is it Matt Garza? No, he's higher than
that. Matt Garza is number 101 for you, Scott.
Oh, well, that's...
Oh, so I think he switched it. I think it's supposed to be number 101 for Al, number 105 for Scott, I think.
Okay.
But I will double check.
Or would Matt Garza be 105 for me?
No, Matt Garza is 97 for you.
Okay.
It's Jake Peavy.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh!
It's either Garza or Peavy.
It's one of the... Look up the actual numbers.
They're right. Yeah, no, it's Peavy.
Okay.
So Jake Peavy and Homer Bailey basically have the same exact numbers. What separates them?
Initially, I got to say perception, because I am shocked. I'm shocked that the walk rate, now there's not the innings here, but I wouldn't think that Bailey would have that many more innings than Peavy.
I don't know. This doesn't seem right. It can't be Peavy. Peavy's got a much worse ERA, 490 something.
And I don't think it's Garza either, because Garza hasn't really been striking
Garza's
guys
got like
out.
A 370 ERA.
Yeah.
What has happened? Nick Lang and Charlottesville.
But a lot of the numbers are.
You're
I think
taking
the,
down
I think
the podcast.
Point is that Homer Bailey's been pretty awful.
Yeah, he has been. But I mean, if it is Peavy, that's the difference. Even or let's say it is Peavy, that's the difference. Bailey is. I have a lot more confidence in Bailey coming around with better numbers than that than I do Peavy because of where they are in their careers and because of what they showed last year. Peavy is at an age where you would expect decline, and he took a big step back last year. So it's not surprising to see him take another big step back this year. Bailey is still in his prime, has shown signs of coming around recently, hasn't come around all the way yet, but there's reasons to be encouraged there. I'm not ranking him 19th, but 42nd, I think, is given the upside for Bailey. I'm happy with that.
And I'll stand by my Bailey rankings. I think he's been probably the least lucky pitcher in baseball. Those skill ratios are still very good. It's just the ERA and the whip that are inflated because of too many hits on balls in play. But pitcher number two cannot be Jake Peavy, because I just looked up Peavy's stats.
So, yeah, I don't know who it is.
Were you looking at points league rankings? Because maybe we need to go to the Roto rankings.
Yeah, I looked at both. There's no consistency. This is a big mystery here.
All right, Nick Lang. You're going to have
to... No, Jake Peavy is 101 and 105, but for Al and Scott, respectively, not Scott and Al, respectively.
Is it Tim Lincecum?
It could be. Could be Clay Buck. No, it couldn't be Clay Buchholz.
Is it worth investing the rest of the podcast in figuring this out?
And that, I can assure you, it is.
It is Tim Lincecum.
No, it's Lincecum.
It is Tim Lincecum.
There you go.
So, I mean, and we clearly, have both... clearly a lot more faith in Bailey bouncing
yeah,
back.
Yeah, that one's easy. There you go. All right, so thank you, Nick, for the fun email, even if I should have proofread it beforehand. And
well, we've talked about Bailey, but, I mean, we haven't really talked about why we're not going to put Lincecum up in the rankings.
Because these numbers stink. I mean, the only reason why we care
they
is because
stink.
One of them is Homer Bailey, who was really good last year and
yeah.
doesn't throw
well, but I was
90 miles per hour fastball.
But I looked at the strikeout-to-walk ratio and thought, you know, that's not too bad.
Oh,
we've been saying that about Lincecum from the beginning, though. I mean, yeah. At some point, we got to get over that.
Yeah, who cares? So he has a good strikeout-to-walk ratio. He's just not a good pitcher anymore.
All right, well, I'm not going to argue with you on that, so we can move on.
All right, let's go to Thursday standouts, and we'll pick up the pace a little bit, guys, so we can spend time on the starter sit a little bit later. Al claims he's going to convince us that Wade Miley is a good start next week. Is that right?
That's correct.
To start Wade Miley. Jared Cozart. Al picked him up, I think, in two leagues yesterday. One or two?
I think just one for the two starts. And I already have him in a couple.
Oh, okay. So is that the only reason why? Because I see why people would be encouraged by Cozart. Last five... all quality starts, last three starts, four earned runs in 22 innings, but only six strikeouts. And the three games in his last three starts were against the Rays twice and the Braves yesterday, two of the four lowest scoring teams in baseball. I don't get it with the strikeouts, though, because four and five starts ago, back-to-back games with eight Ks, and then what does he have, like six over his last three?
Well, yeah.
Two Ks or fewer in... five of his last seven.
And then the other two were eight strikeouts.
Yeah, but I'm viewing those as outliers for him. Right. He's just not a strikeout guy. I don't have interest in him in 12-team mixed leagues in one-start weeks, period. Even though I think he's going to be very good for ERA going forward.
So is he comparable to Henderson Alvarez?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, very, because he's even a really good ground ball pitcher like Alvarez. So very similar profiles.
Josh Beckett. he's really having like the best season of his career right now. He's got the lowest WHIP of his career, just barely over one, 1.004. 2.11 ERA, out-dueled Adam Wainwright yesterday, and 88 Ks in 93 and two-thirds. Your thoughts on Beckett, who's got a 1.34 ERA in his last seven?
This is three straight starts now with seven innings after only doing that twice in his first 12. So he seems to be, they seem to be more comfortable leaving in him in. He seems to be going deeper after an injury-plagued 2013. I mean, it's all getting better for him, not worse.
Would you try to sell high on him as today is buy low, sell high day? I feel like there's regression coming. I just, it doesn't necessarily have to be a lot.
I totally agree with that statement because, and I was very slow to buy in on Beckett this year, but as you said, he's getting better, a lot better. Just very, very unhittable right now. Mm-hmm. And we've seen inconsistency with Beckett over the last several years, and some of it's been health-related. But, I mean, when he's been good, he's been very good.
Yeah, but four of the last six seasons, ERA over four.
I feel like there's been a big change this year, though. It's kind of a storyline thing, but A.J. Ellis, when he had his first in on the DL, the Dodgers catcher, he made kind of a extended pitch to Beckett about his curveball and how unhittable it is and how he needs to throw it more. Had a lot of like data backing it up and everything. And Beckett's taken it to heart and has thrown his curveball a lot more since then. And I'll put it, he's unhittable right now, as the data showed that Ellis showed Beckett showed. I think that's a conscious decision that he's not really going to go back on, and I don't know that we need to worry about him regressing to what he did in the previous years. Even if there is a little regression coming, right, just because law of averages, it's not going to be what happened in previous years.
All right, Hector Rondon worked a scoreless ninth, got the save for the Cubs, and Vance Worley is 12% owned. He's 2-0 with a 1.74 ERA, three walks, 12 strikeouts, and 20 and two-thirds. And he's made three starts. They've come at Miami, who stopped hitting beginning with that game, at the Cubs, and home against the Mets. Underowned Vance Worley, 12%?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. Not really striking anybody out. And it actually seems to be a lot of these guys kind of popping up. We just talked about Cozart. Kyle Gibson, for the most part, has been excellent without strikeouts. Anderson Alvarez. And so I think you can add Vance Worley and also Jeff Locke to that list of guys who've just been really effective with great control.
Who'd you rather have, Worley or Locke?
I think Locke. It's very close.
Would you rather have either of those two over Marco Gonzalez?
Sure, I would. Yeah.
You would rather have them than Marco Gonzalez?
Yeah, just because I don't know how long Gonzalez is going to be around. He may only be making one more start.
Well, how long is Vance Worley going to be around?
I think much longer than that. Because even one of the Pirates beat writers has speculated that they think after today, Compton's getting sent down. And the only thing that really made me a little skeptical about that was that Worley had yet to make this start when this was Rob Biertenfeld, I think is how you say his name, from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. He said he wrote that before this Worley start. And I thought if he goes out and bombs, maybe it's Worley that gets sent down. But at this point, I doubt it.
I'll run through the injuries, news, and notes here. Minnesota called up middle infielder Jorge Polanco from single A. that's crazy. Are we interested at all?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a short-term thing anyhow.
Hanley Ramirez is day-to-day with a shoulder injury. He has no structural damage, but it's been hurting him for a while. Do you think deeper leagues we should pick up Alex Guerrero, Scott?
Well, depending on how deep the league is, you might need to pick him up anyway. I'm kind of skeptical that he would get the call to play shortstop or that D. Gordon would move over to shortstop just because I don't think the Dodgers feel like either of them can play it. But if Alex Guerrero comes back from his procedure and keeps tearing it up at AAA, at some point they're going to have to find some way to work him in.
I'm a little skeptical that Hanley Ramirez is not going to require a DL stint, though. Like they keep kind of downplaying it, but if it's been bothering him for a while, it wouldn't be the worst thing. I hate when guys play through injuries. You know that.
If they don't play well, yeah.
If they don't play well, yeah, exactly. Just go on the damn DL. Bryce Harper could be back Monday. Denard Span has 25 doubles this season. He's on a career pace there. He's on a career pace for steals, too, with 13 so far. He's also on a career worst pace at, on base percentage, which is like 312 or something horrible. But that said, what do you think happens Monday if Bryce Harper's back? I'll re-ask it.
I think Danny Espinosa loses the most playing time. And if Ryan Zimmerman goes back to third and continues to struggle with errors and it's costing the Nationals games, then maybe they consider moving Harper to center field and taking Span out. But I think the preference, I mean, as bad as Span's on-base percentage has been, he's still been a heck of a lot better offensively than Espinosa.
Sure. All right, Bud Norris probably headed to the DL for a short stint. Adam Eaton left yesterday's game with leg cramps. Nolan Arenado could begin a rehab assignment next week. Looking at the Twins, Danny Santana was out with a bone bruise in his knee. Josh Willingham also sat with Sam Fuld, Oswaldo Arcia, and Chris Parmalee starting.
Moving parts.
Yeah. Brandon Belt began a rehab assignment. Cole Calhoun and Albert Pujols each have 3 steals this season. They both got their third yesterday. Didn't see that tie coming.
Neither one is any kind of Giancarlo Stanton, though.
I guess or Jay Bruce, right? Calhoun's been very good lately.
So is Pujols.
Yep. Except the home runs.
Well, yeah, but 347 in his last 12, only 2 Ks during that stretch. Wow. We were more worried about the batting average, I think.
2 Ks, wow. Where are we? Michael Morse was out with an illness. He did pinch hit, but Adam Duvall started at first base and he homered. But again, Brandon Belt on his way back. Willian Rosario left with lower back tightness. Ricky Weeks is going to continue to see at-bats against lefties. He homered yesterday against Colorado. And then Scooter Gennett pinch hit and homered later in the game. Starling Marte remained out. Jose Bautista hopes to return this weekend. Tony Cingrani's on the AAA DL with shoulder issues. And St. Louis bats 3 mats at the top of their order. And I don't know why it took me that long to comment on that.
Well, it's
Carpenter.
You got to it before I did.
Adams is a recent development, right?
Oh, okay. Third. That's kind of, I guess, what I suspected.
Yeah.
But yesterday they batted 3 mats at the top of the order. We love it.
Yeah.
Buy low, sell high. Scott has 3 buy low candidates and 3 sell highs. Al has the same. We'll start with Scott's buy low candidates. They are Matt Holliday, Justin Verlander, and Ian Kennedy.
Yep. Holliday, I think, is one of the clearest buy low candidates of any player at any position because you look at his numbers and you're probably underwhelmed. 269, 5 home runs. 393 slugging percentage. Doesn't look good. But his track record is as consistent as any player in baseball. He is 34 years old, so maybe there's a chance there's some regression going on here. But worst case scenario, you buy him, he doesn't get any better at all, which I think is hard to believe, but let's say it happens. Holliday, with those numbers he has right now, is a top 20 outfielder in head-to-head points leagues, right?
Yes,
next to Alex Gordon.
But what about in rotisserie leagues? Would you like me to look that up?
Well, the thing is, if you're that high in head-to-head leagues,
he's not in the top 30.
He's not in the top 30. Well, he's still worth buying, I think, for the chance that he's going to turn it around.
He's not even in the top 40 right now. He's behind Curtis Granderson. He's behind Jay Bruce. He's behind Ben Revere. He's just ahead of Drew Stubbs and Matt Kemp. So, yeah, I mean, he's a productive player in points leagues, but 5 home runs and 2 steals this year. You need more than that. You're not going to get the steals. But
I just have,
do you still maintain that he's a buy-low candidate,
yeah,
in roto leagues?
I do. I mean, I would be very surprised if he doesn't hit 300 this season. He's at 269 now.
Okay, we're at Justin Verlander.
Yeah, and this is maybe me buying too much into what happened in his last start, where it was very good, looked more like the Verlander of old, and he said he made a ton of mechanical adjustments between that and his previous start. And based on what we had seen from him in terms of velocity and everything else, it seemed like there must be a mechanical issue going on. It's not a skills regression. So if he goes out and has another great start,
you're done.
It might
no chance to get him.
Right, yeah. Right. You may not have another shot at him. This is your chance to buy low on him still. It's risky, but if you're legitimately buying low, then it really shouldn't backfire for you.
And how about Ian Kennedy?
Ian Kennedy, yeah, he's had, what, three or four bad starts in a row, but what were the issues for him after his near Cy Young season in 2011, I think it was? It was walks, it was home runs. During this rough patch, he had one game where he issued four walks, but the rest of the control has been great. He's allowed two home runs in those four starts, so it's not like, you know, suddenly he's getting knocked around like he did last year. I think the underlying numbers say he's the same pitcher he was in his first dozen starts or whatever it was, and that he's just had bad luck these last few starts. And I know you dropped him in a league, Adam. It was a shallower league, but you dropped him. So there's probably other owners, Kennedy owners right now, freaking out too. And I think it's unwarranted.
If he pitched for a better team, I don't know that I would have dropped him, because I understood that he was striking out a lot of guys. But it's just one of those. It was a roster crunch thing, not a complete lack of faith in him. Al's buy low candidates are Steven Strasburg, Shin-Soo Choo, and really, Everett Cabrera.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I still believe.
Start with that one.
All right. Yeah, because that's probably the most, I think, controversial. And it really comes down to two trends for him. Lately, he's just been striking out at a crazy rate. And he's been really inconsistent with that throughout his career. But again, with him, sort of what goes up does come down eventually. So I just think he's due for regression in that skill area. So I think he's going to make better contact at some point this season. And then when he does, I think he's also going to have some luck regression, because he's hitting somewhere around 220 on grounders, which is normal for just about anybody else. But for somebody with his speed, that is way too low.
Right, right.
So, yeah, no, I think
too low.
And that team as you know as a whole, they're like the worst lineup in baseball history. They can't continue for this long. I mean, they might finish last in runs scored, but they can't be this bad forever.
Yeah, I mean, there's several people in that lineup that are due for something better, and I think he's the prime one actually.
Okay.
And then
Chu is interesting. Al, I want to know more about his ankle. That's my only concern. He's been playing banged up. I don't know if that's affecting him.
Yeah. And that's a legit concern, but in terms of what he's done so far, what you have to keep in mind with Chu is that I've certainly been guilty of this, and maybe others are too, is that I've looked at his better seasons and placed my expectations something closer to that. But there have been years where he's been a 250, 260 hitter with kind of moderate power. So that's where he is right now. I mean, actually 243, so not quite at that level, but that's the floor for him. So sort of with Cabrera, I feel like there's nowhere for Chu to go but up. And it's not like he's, on some kind of like historically bad pace for himself. So that's the logic there.
And Strasburg.
And Strasburg, I just, the ERA looks a lot higher than you think it should be for Strasburg. There's really only one problem when you look at his secondary stats, and that's a really high line drive rate. That is among one of the most variables. I was looking for another word there. That's the one, the stats that's most due to just fluctuate because of random chance of any kind of pitcher stat.
Okay.
Everything else looks like you would expect it to be for Strasburg.
Al's got three sell high candidates. They are Adam LaRoche, who Scott will probably disagree with, Marcelo Zuna, who is extremely interesting to me, and Jason Vargas. LaRoche,
yeah, I see red flags all over the place here. And I've talked before about the fact that he's got the high BABIP right now at 350. That is really out of line with his norms. So I expect the batting average to go down. But also the power. The power's not really been there in a dramatic way so far. I mean, he's on sort of a, 25 homer, 30 doubles pace. But of the 9 home runs that he's hit in 61 games, 5 of those have been classified by the Hit Tracker site as short distance home runs. Mm. So he's not hitting authoritative home runs. He doesn't really have that many doubles, and he's living off of a high batting average that just looks like it's got nowhere to go but down.
Scott, rebuttal.
I don't think he's getting enough respect to begin with. So like, yeah, you could say, oh, he's not going to be able to sustain this. He's not going to be able to do that. But I think for what he's doing now, just enjoy it. I mean, he's walking at a much higher rate than he ever has before. He's always been a second half player, and he's doing this kind of damage in the first half. And the only other year I remember of having even close to as good of a first half as this was 2 years ago, which was a career season for him. So
would you kind of compare it to Victor Martinez and say, like, even if he doesn't continue to be as good as he's been now, you're still going to get a good player that you don't want to give up?
If the walk rate is legit, I mean, he has an on-base percentage of like 425 right now. It's absurd. Wow. If it's legit, then his batting average could stand to fall 30 or 40 points, and I would still think he's not getting the respect he deserves.
Marcelo Zuna, you know, as somebody who's owned Marcelo Zuna and dropped Marcelo Zuna, the weird thing is, like, he ranks really high. He's the number 34 outfielder in points, number 26. Not really high, but certainly higher than we expected. But he never gets really hot. He hits a home run, and then he waits like 10 days, and then he hits another home run. And then maybe he'll hit two in four games. But he's hit 13 home runs, and he's gone 9 games between homers, then 6, then 8, then 2, then 5, then 9, then 0, then 2, then 4, then 3, then 6, then 11 games. So he never has these crazy hot streaks, but at the end of the day, he's still putting up good numbers. Why are you calling him a sell high?
Throw out one stat that's really at the crux of this. He's kind of anti-ever. 361 on ground balls. That's his batting average there.
Wow.
So you could easily slice a third off of that or more to get where he's likely to be rest of season.
All right, that's Marcelo Zuna.
So not really, you know, hitting for a great average as it is, and so he could really be a true albatross in that category. The power, maybe he'll maintain that, but the plate discipline is really bad, and I think he could be prone to horrendous slumps, and I just, at this point, I don't think he's got much batting average upside at all.
From Ozuna to Vargas.
Yeah, you know, and I've always liked Vargas in a certain sense, you know, not a guy that I'd start every week, but, you know, a guy who probably more often than not is a good two-start play. But I think he's getting a little too much love so far. He's got really great run support. He's one of those guys I was referring to earlier in the podcast, has a lot more run support than you would expect. And I know the Royals have been hitting better lately, but I still expect that run support to fall off. And you know, just think he's overperformed in general a little bit.
Scott's sell high candidates are Chase Utley, Eric Ibar, and Bartolo Colon. Hey, now might be a perfect time to sell high on Chase Utley. Had a 3-hit game and a walk-off homer last night. What, only make his 5th home run or something like that?
Sixth home run. And that's part of the reason I think he should sell high. He's 35 years old. It looks like his power is beginning to dwindle. He doesn't run anymore at all. Not that he was a huge stolen base guy before, but he was a relevant contributor there. But the main reason is just, as a 35-year-old with a history of injuries, averaged 108 games the previous 4 seasons. That's it. He's due for an extended layoff here, and after half a season of this kind of play from him, I think you could get something really valuable for him. Eric Ibar is, in head-to-head leagues, the 7th-ranked shortstop right now, and it being such a weak position, I think that carries a lot of weight for some people. But it's partially a product of more valuable players struggling,
yeah,
like Desmond, Jed Lowry. And partially just a lot of luck Ibar himself has had, particularly with RBI. And so his pace is going to slow down. He'll be useful, but he won't be top 10 shortstop rest of season.
And Bartolo Colon, sell high.
Yeah. I mean, just look at his week-by-week breakdown the last few weeks. He's like 30 points every week. He's had a great stretch here, pitching deep into games and limiting the damage, but he's about as hittable as it gets, because he's low velocity, always in the strike zone. Things can go really bad for him,
but it's
any
been,
given outing.
Been that way for years, for a few years now.
I know,
and he keeps getting the job done.
Last year was really the only year where if you owned him and you just left him in your lineup, you were pleased with the end result. There's been ups and downs in the years before that, but last year was the only year where that happened, and I think it was an aberration given his age. And I think durability is going to be an issue for him too.
All right.
And I almost put him on my list, either him or Vargas, because they both are run support regression candidates.
Well, then, I have a category here called What in the World?
What in the world?
Mike Leake struck out 12 Giants over 8 innings with 4 hits and 1 run. Jay Happ threw 7 2/3 scoreless with 8 Ks and 4 hits against the White Sox. And Rick Porcello threw a complete game 3-hit shutout at Texas with 3 walks and 6 Ks. What in the world happened last night?
Weirdness, because Porcello and Leake have both been struggling. Jay Happ has been sort of Jay Happ-ish. And I don't really chalk much up to the Happ start. Porcello, this was like the good Porcello that we've seen over the last 12 months or so. So that I find that sort of intriguing. And Leake, I think this is maybe a once in a lifetime kind of thing for him with all the strikeouts. But he gets Padres next week, so you still might want to consider starting him.
Rick Porcello, 84% owned. Would you consider dropping him for Gibson or Locke, guys in that group?
I'm sure I have Gibson ranked ahead of him. I'm sure I have Hahn. I'm pretty sure I have Hahn ranked ahead of him. He's on pace for 22 wins right now, so I feel like that's going to be a tough sell. I honestly think he and Leake are very similar in the kind of numbers they're going to offer you, except maybe the win-loss record. And I think Porcello is more likely to suffer from... I think Porcello has been more lucky as far as that goes than Leake has been unlucky.
Would you rather have Mike Leake or Ryan Vogelsong, who had a nice start yesterday?
Vogelsong.
Yep.
Vogelsong or Cozart?
Vogelsong.
Pretty similar. Yeah, I'll go Cozart there.
Joe Mauer went 3-for-5 with 2 doubles. Last 21 games, .259. No home runs, 7 RBI, but 8 doubles. He is starting to double more. That's good.
You said it yesterday, and then he hit 2 more.
Yeah. Number 7 catcher in points leagues right now, number 12 in Roto. But still, this good stretch with 8 doubles, no home runs in what was it, 21 games? Yeah, no home runs. So I just don't know about his Roto value, his category value, guys.
Well, and you have an interesting thing here, second most at bats for a catcher-eligible player behind Luke Roy.
Yeah.
I mean, my logic in starting the year and keeping him there for most of the year, keeping Mauer number one, was I thought he was just going to annihilate the competition in playing time, and that hasn't been the case.
I think it's going to get there. Like when we argued about Molina and Mauer, I think Mauer had like 2 more at-bats than Molina, and now he might have 20.
Yeah.
Which isn't that big, but at the end of the year, if it's 40 to 50, that probably is a pretty big difference. Santana obviously will probably have the same amount or close to it going forward.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, it won't look like that in the at-bats because of the walks, but let's say plate appearances. But I think maybe as the year goes on, there might be more of a gulf in at-bats. But still, need some home runs. Some. It's going to be something here. Right? Don't we need that?
If he doesn't deliver that, he needs to hit well over 300.
Right.
Big second halves for Mauer and Hardy and Cano. They're just going to be power maniacs.
You're being serious?
Well, no, I'm saying I hope for it.
Oh, yeah, I hope for it too. Yeah. And last thing here, Doug Fister has a career low 5.2 strikeouts per 9. He has struck out 9 batters over his last 4 starts. Is that a concern for you guys? He's pitching well, but that's really, really low.
It is lower than usual, but it's going to be low anyway. It's going to be below 7. Just a few starts in for him to be... This little bit of a difference, it doesn't really register for me.
Let's finish up then with some weak help after these news items. Juan Uribe returned, Juan Lagares returned, Wilson Ramos returned, Freddie Freeman returned to the lineup, Brandon Phillips returned to the lineup. Let's finish it off with some hitting advice and some 2-star pitchers. I'll do the pitchers first today.
Okay.
That's okay with everyone.
It's fine. It's fine.
I forgot to print it out, so luckily we all have our wonderful laptops and wireless internet here. And
fine inventions.
I'm scanning the elite guys here. Chris Archer at the Yankees and at the Tigers. Elite in terms of ownership, anyway. 90% owned. Archer at the Yankees and at the Tigers. Start or sit?
Start. A must start.
Oh. Jake Arrieta at Boston at Washington.
Likewise.
Must start.
Must start.
Henderson Alvarez. Phillies at home. Cardinals on the road.
Borderline start. Advisable.
If anybody starts Dan Haren this week, I will punch you.
In the face?
No. Someplace that won't hurt my hand as much. Maybe like the thigh.
That's getting a little too close for comfort there.
Like the side of the thigh.
Yeah.
Like a Charlie horse area.
Yeah, we're staying away. Well, no, I'm not staying away from you because I'm right, not starting Dan Haren.
All right, yeah, you don't have to. He's got to start at Colorado this week.
Yeah.
Agree, sit Dan Haren?
He would have been a must-sit anyway, but he's like well situated in that must-sit list because of that Colorado start.
Porcello, Oakland, and Tampa Bay at home.
Yeah, just missed the cut. Great start this last time out, but not that impressive otherwise.
A.J. Burnett at Miami at Pittsburgh.
Don't trust that.
Scott, you have two guys on this in this league.
Yeah,
this Roto League where the three of us are in first, second, and third place. How about that?
Uh-oh.
You have Zach Wheeler at Atlanta and home against Texas and A.J. Burnett at Miami and at Pittsburgh. Are you going to start him or sit him?
You know, just the way I roll, probably going to start him.
Yeah.
Because really the only excuse to start them is the two start weeks with the number of closers I have in this particular league. Gotta maximize starts so that I can get the advantage I need in saves.
Gotcha.
So it's more of a strategic thing than a matchups oriented thing.
This is a tough week. I feel like these pitchers are.
It's not good.
It could be. I mean, there's an upside.
Yeah. No. There's guys
like
with
Danny
upside.
Duffy at Minnesota at Cleveland. What do you think?
Yeah. No. That's a. I mean, he's in my borderline group. But, pretty much anybody that makes my borderline group is somebody I'd be willing to start.
Let's look at this group of pitchers. Lincecum, who is Cardinals at home and at San Diego. And ordinarily, I wouldn't consider it, but he had a decent start against San Diego last time out.
Yeah, he fared well.
Hiroki Kuroda, Tampa Bay, they've been horrible, and at Minnesota. Right now, at Minnesota is starting to look like a pretty good matchup, or Minnesota in general. They're not hitting, and
they need Yasmeel back.
or Danny Santana. They're struggling a little bit. Oswaldo Arcia and Willingham have cooled off, and Morales has been lousy. Colin McHugh, Seattle, and at the Angels. Duffy, Drew Hutchison, one home start, one road start. So it'll be terrible and great. How about that? How about Lincecum, Kuroda, McHugh, Duffy, Hutchison?
All right, well, let's see. Kuroda, Hutchison, Lincecum. I all have in the bottom half of my borderline list. So they are advisable, but about as borderline gets.
What about McHugh and Duffy?
And then, I'm sorry, yeah, Duffy is also in that borderline list. Just to run through, that's six pitchers. Cozart, Kuroda, Duffy, Locke, Hutchison, Lincecum. That's the end of my borderline list.
And that's in rank order.
Then the top half is Beckett, and he's not a must-start only because of pitching in Colorado. And then McHugh, Wheeler, Miley, Alvarez, and Hahn.
All right, so if there's a guy that you think is like widely available that people need to pick up this week, one or two guys, who are you recommending?
All right, well, Wade Miley, he's, I think, pretty widely available.
Well, let's go a little, because like, you do Cozart over him, right?
No, I have him over Cozart this week.
All right, okay.
And this is all about the venues for Miley. Big split differential between home and road. Two road starts, one at Pittsburgh, good ballpark, not an overwhelming lineup, and at the Braves.
Not an overwhelming lineup based on the entire season, but based on when three of those outfielders are healthy.
Okay,
about that.
Right, though they've been awesome.
Marte isn't healthy, though.
Not now, but he's not on the DL. He might start at that point.
Just throwing that out there.
They're improved, but I think they've gone from being a really good matchup for pitchers for being like middle of the road. Because the bottom of that lineup is not so great.
Agreed.
And it's a good ballpark. And Miley's thing, he's striking out many more batters this year, really good strikeout rate, decent walk rate, because his walk rate is always between good and decent. Mm-hmm. It's just the home runs, and that's only been a problem at Chase Field for Miley.
5 home runs and 7 road starts, 12 home runs and 10 home starts. So, yeah, big difference.
So you look at the overall stats, you think this is a guy you never want to start outside of a deep league, but 2 road starts that look, you know, like pretty decent matchups for him. He's very high on my borderline list.
Who else?
Let's see.
Like McHugh?
Yeah, no, McHugh I like a lot. He's my second highest borderline guy.
What about deeper leagues, David Phelps, Tampa Bay at home, Minnesota on the
road?
Yep,
yeah, once you get out of that borderline list, the top like 24 or so, the must-starts and the borderline guys, the bottom third is pretty dreadful. And Phelps is one of your better bets, actually, just because of the matchups versus Tampa Bay at the Twins. And I sort of disagree with you about the Twins as a matchup. I think they're also kind of middle of the road because those guys could heat up at any time.
Yeah, all right. I guess it's just a matter of
It's not an overwhelmingly, you know, bad matchup, and the Rays are a really good matchup.
Okay, Scott, 4 or 5 minutes for hitting advice.
So there are no 8-game weeks this week, which is normal, but there was one last week. There is a 5-game week, though, and it belongs to the Milwaukee Brewers. And while the matchups within that week aren't quite bad enough to make my 5 worst matchups, they're still pretty tough. They're Hutchinson, Simon, Bailey, and Latos are 4 of them. So that means for the second straight week, I am calling Gene Segura a sit.
Ah.
Just last week it was an abundance of left-handers, and he's not good against them. This week it's just he's not very good in general, and only 5 games to work with. But you Segura owners do have a ready-made replacement on the waiver wire in the form of Brad Miller.
Oh, yeah.
Who we have recently rebranded Brad Miller.
Picked him up.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's still widely available. The Mariners, like most Mariners, his numbers are better on the road. And this week in particular, he's at Houston, at the White Sox. So 2 favorable places to hit, and he's hot, obviously. It's a good time to look at him. So let's look at the best and worst matchups. The best matchups, I have the Dodgers, Pirates, Braves, Royals, and Angels. So a few players who would benefit from that include Eric Hosmer, actually, I think is a decent start this week, because not only are the Royals among those favorable matchups, but they're facing nothing but righties.
Okay.
And they're all on the road, where his numbers are better than at home. Neil Walker, I mentioned the Pirates in there. He's fresh off the DL. He also benefits from them playing at home. I know it's not a great park for hitters in general, but for some reason he always hits there. It's kind of like Pablo Sandoval in San Francisco. It's just his thing. He's comfortable there. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. But you need to get Walker in your lineup now that he's back. So let's move on to the worst matchups. I have the White Sox have the worst, followed by the Rockies. Even though there's 4 games at home, it's against the Dodgers staff, so it's still bad. So White Sox, Rockies, Astros, Reds, and the Padres all have bad matchups. I would probably sit both Jason Castro and Matt Dominguez of the Astros this week.
Dominguez, I was surprised to see 51% owned.
Yeah.
But he's basically doing exactly what he did last year when he was like a number 15 third baseman.
It's a weak position, and he did homer yesterday, but he was hitless in his previous 6 games, so it just makes sense. Bad matchup, sit him. I would also, did I mention the Tigers? No, the Tigers didn't quite make the 5 worst matchups, but their matchups aren't great either. I would sit
JD Martinez.
I thought about sitting JD Martinez. I chickened out. It's a moment of cowardice. Don't feel like I can recommend anybody to sit somebody that hot. So
ice cold. He has a 1-game hitless streak.
Yeah, he does. So I'm taking
with a sack fly.
I'm taking the coward's way out and sitting Torii Hunter instead, because their emphasis on playing JD Martinez is going to affect the rest of their outfield. Torii Hunter's coming back from injury. He's one of the ones who might sit with these bad matchups. Don't want to start him. That's
okey
what I got
okey
for you.
Then we are done here. Great show today, guys. And we'll talk to you all next week. Watch Fantasy Baseball Today live at noon Eastern. You have no excuse today. There is no U.S. soccer game on at noon, so you better watch. We'll talk to you then.